The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Coming to you from the Circa Sportsbook here in downtown Las Vegas, I'm Scott Seidenberg in for Gil Alexander. This is a numbers game here on VSiN, the sports betting network. We have a ton of things to go over here as we got French Open tennis semifinal action in progress right now. I know Gil will be happy that we're talking a little tennis here as we are in the middle of the second set currently between Carlos Alcaraz and Lorenzo Musetti. Alcaraz closed as a minus 700 favorite in this match. And after dropping the first set and trailing here in the second set, you can get Alcaraz on the live number right now, minus 165. Musetti, meanwhile, plus 125, despite having that lead after the first set. But we're in the middle of the second set right now, knotted at four. Again, Alcaraz on the live number, minus 185. And coming up a little bit later on, the second semifinal between Jannik Sinner and Novak Djokovic, where the Joker is a plus 320 dog. Coming up, we're going to talk NBA Finals with Alex Barutha of RotoWire. Will join us on the program. We'll get his best bets for game number two as we react to what we saw last night in game number one. We'll also be joined in our second hour by professional bettor and multi-time contest winner Steve Fezzik. Get his thoughts on all things betting and Vegas. But let's talk about what we saw last night. And I have one question. After the Indiana Pacers for... It seems like every game they come back and they win. This is now another historic comeback, this time down 15 points in the fourth quarter to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Pacers win on Tyrese Halliburton's last second shot, 111-110. My question is how? How does this keep happening? How does this team continue to defy not just the odds, but also the historical context in which they find themselves in, night out in these NBA playoffs? How many times are we going to have to read the stats of the Pacers became the first team in 1,000 playoff games to win down this many points with this few time on the clock? Or the Pacers became the first team to do this. The Pacers became the first team to do this. This is an unprecedented historical run for the Indiana Pacers through these NBA playoffs and now into the NBA Finals. The Oklahoma City Thunder had that game in control the entire way, up 15 points in the fourth quarter. And late in the game, and I know both of these teams are NBA Finals novices. There's no experience. Pascal Siakam is the only one with experience here, and he's on the Indiana Pacers. But the Thunder looked like a team last night, late in the game, that has not been in this moment before. Which is crazy to say because they found themselves in a lot of tough moments in this postseason. But the Pacers, meanwhile, the first 15-point fourth quarter comeback in the NBA Finals since the 2011 Dallas Mavericks, who were also coached by Rick Carlisle. So you have a head coach that's been there, done that before. You have a group of players that throughout this postseason has been there, done that before. So it's no wonder why they find themselves comfortable in these late game situations, no matter how much they're trailing by. And for Tyrese Halliburton, who scored 14 points last night, just let that sink in for a moment. Only 14 points. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had a magnificent performance, 38 points for the MVP. Tyrese Halliburton scored just 14 points, but the biggest two when it mattered the most. And now you look at this run for Halliburton throughout these NBA playoffs. Few players have an opportunity to hit game-tying or game-winning shots in the final minute in multiple playoff games in their entire careers. Halliburton's done it four times in these playoffs. It's unbelievable what he has done here in the postseason as far as game-tying or game-winning shots. And I saw an incredible stat given out by the great Tom Haberstraw on Twitter last night. Tyrese Halliburton's effective field goal shooting in the final minutes and 2 minutes of the games is over 100% because it magnifies the moment of the game. It magnifies three-pointers as well. He's 13 of 15 on game-tying or go-ahead shots in this postseason in the final 2 minutes. He's 6 of 7 when taking the shot to tie or take the lead in the final 90 seconds. Historic stuff here for Tyrese Haliburton. Historic stuff for the Indiana Pacers. Now the question is not how they've done it, but how can we as bettors take advantage of it? You see, in game number one, I came on Visa and I'm talking on every show I'm on about how the numbers are strongly in favor of the Oklahoma City Thunder dominating the first half. And we saw it. They covered the 5.5 in the first half last night. Easy bet. We cashed it. I also had Thunder wire to wire. Didn't cash that because they had the lead for the entire game, except for the final 0.3 seconds, thanks to Tyrese Haliburton's shot. But now how do we take advantage of another historic collapse by a team in the NBA playoffs? I mean, we saw it from the Knicks against the Pacers in game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. We saw it from the Cavs, obviously. We see it from everybody that plays the Pacers. And the way we look to take advantage of it is by looking at the Oklahoma City Thunder in the first quarter of game number two. Now, this is, yes, the zigzag, which we can talk about how profitable that's been throughout this entire NBA playoffs. And just in the history of going through the NBA playoffs, the zigzag has been a profitable strategy. Just betting on the team that lost the previous game to cover the spread, you are crushing it. In this postseason alone, you're over 60% ATS. But why in the first quarter is this such a strong trend? Let me give you the numbers first, and then we can hypothesize why it's such a strong trend. In these NBA playoffs alone, this is going to be the 8th time where the home team has lost game one as the favorite. In game two, in this postseason, in the 7 previous times, that home team in game number two is outscoring their opponent 31-17 in the first quarter. I'll repeat, 31-17. And it's something I've been on this entire postseason talking about, not just the teams that lose the game one, the home teams that lose game one to bounce back and win the first quarter in game number two, but also the opponent's team total to go under the first quarter in game number two. These teams are only averaging 17 points per first quarter. Oh, and by the way, the Indiana Pacers have been that team. In the second series, second round, Eastern Conference, Pacers win game number one in Cleveland against the Cavs. In game number two, Pacers were outscored in the first quarter 32-15. They go under their first quarter team total. Cavs win the first quarter. Pacers against the Knicks in the Eastern Conference Finals. Game number one, they win historic fashion on the road. Game number two, Knicks win the first quarter 26-24. Pacers go under the 25.5 of their team total in the first quarter. Knicks win the first quarter. And by the way, that 24 points, the most points that any team has scored in this postseason in this situation. From the Oklahoma City Thunder perspective, look at what they did in game number two against the Denver Nuggets. They lose game one as the home favorite. Game number two, the Thunder outscore the Nuggets in the first quarter, 45-21. Just like embarrassing stuff. And we could look at all the other series, but I'm just want to specifically lock into these two teams to show you that this has played out for both of these teams already in this postseason. If you go back several seasons, let's start with the 2021 playoffs. So I like to go post-COVID. Home teams that lose game number one in game number two, outscoring their opponents in the first quarter, 29-23. This has not just been a profitable strategy in this postseason. It's been a profitable strategy going back years. And so the way I'm taking advantage of the collapse by the Thunder and the epic comeback once again by the Indiana Pacers is to back the Thunder in the first quarter and fade the Pacers in the first quarter. We go Thunder winning the first quarter, under Pacers team total in the first quarter. Those are the plays for game number two. Now, the market is going to move on this because it always happens, especially when we have 2 days off in between NBA Finals games. We don't have game two tomorrow night. Game two is on Sunday. So the more time that passes between game one and game two, the more time the market has to adjust. If you like the Thunder early now, whether it's the first quarter or the first half, you have to jump in ASAP. You should have jumped in last night. Because not only is this number going to get away from you when the bettors come in and move this, but the market is also going to tax you on the zigzag. And we've already seen it with the Thunder as 11-point favorites for game number two. 9-point favorites in game number one, get bet up to 9.5. Now 11-point favorites for game number two. That is the tax that you pay when the home favorite loses game number one. It's the zigzag. It's the desperation spot. Instead of paying that tax on that full game, I'm going to the derivative markets, which is the first quarter for the Thunder and Pacers team total under in the first quarter. I'm Scott Soderberg. You can hit me up on Twitter at ScottsOnAir, ScottsOnAir. Hit us all up on the network at VSIN Live. We'll get more into the NBA Finals. Plus, Stanley Cup Final game number two is tonight. And we have lots to get into when it comes to Major League Baseball. And we'll update you on the French Open as well. I'm in for Gil Alexander. It's a numbers game right here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Back here on A Numbers Game, I'm Scott Soderberg in for Gil Alexander here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Always on Twitter at ScottsOnAir. You can hit us all up on the network at VSIN Live. We're keeping an eye on what's going on at the French Open right now as we have a 5-5 tie here in the second set after Lorenzo Musetti, the dog, upset Carlos Alcaraz in the first set. So Alcaraz trailing one set to none is now even 5-5 here in the second set. On the live number right now, you can get Carlos Alcaraz at minus 185. Keep in mind, Alcaraz closed at minus 700 to win this semifinal match at Roland Garros. So we're keeping an eye on the action going on there. Coming up a little bit later on, we got Jannik Sinner as a minus 425 favorite over Novak Djokovic. You can get plus 320 on the Joker. Stanley Cup Final game number two is tonight in Edmonton with the Oilers once again a short favorite over the Florida Panthers. The Oilers in game number one closed as a minus 130 favorite, but then money came in on the Panthers. The market moved, and by the time we got to puck drop here at Circa, the Oilers were as low as minus 114 on the money line. Same thing for game number two. Oilers open up as a minus 130 favorite, now down to minus 122, and actually minus 121 here at Circa, and other books are adjusting accordingly as money's coming in on the Florida Panthers to even up this series at a game apiece. And that's the thing. I just said the key word here, even. This is an even series. Well, maybe not after the Oilers win game number one, but prior to game number one, the Oilers were a slight favorite in the series at minus 120 because they have home ice advantage. Now, after game number one, obviously the Oilers take game one and they have jumped to be a minus 210 favorite to win the series. I still believe this is a deep series. And looking at the series markets, you can get some plus money prices pretty much the same as it was before the series started on this series to go six or seven games. The plus 205 for six games, the plus 200 for seven games, that's what it was prior to the series beginning. So no real change in the market belief that this is going to be a deep series, despite Edmonton winning game number one. You see, the home team held serve. See, that was a tennis term I just stole there. You know, see, Gil will be proud. But what do we always say in a seven-game series? A series doesn't begin until a team loses a home game. Now, does home ice mean more in the NHL than it does in other sports? No, because we've seen road teams dominate. The benefit that you have being at home is you have the last change, so you can kind of manipulate your lines and get some players out on the ice against opposing teams' defense, depending on how you want to match up. If Chris Knobloch, the head coach of the Oilers, doesn't want Connor McDavid on the ice when Sasha Barkov is on the ice for the Panthers, he can do that at home. And when the series shifts to Sunrise, Florida, well, Paul Maurice, the head coach of the Panthers, has the advantage there because he can make sure that when McDavid's on the ice, he has his best defensive forward, the Selke Trophy winner, as the best defensive forward in hockey this year, in Alexander Barkov on the ice. That's the home ice advantage. Now, I know some players, some goaltenders in particular, have much better home splits than road splits, but there's not that much of an edge. So the Oilers, slight favorites in the series because they have home ice advantage. I can tell you this, though. Looking at the lines for game number one and game number two, when this series, regardless of the outcome of tonight's game two, when this series shifts to Sunrise, Florida for game number three, the Panthers will be heavier favorites on their home ice than the Oilers are in Edmonton. You can quote me on that because I'm almost, there's no such thing as a guarantee in life. I can pretty much guarantee that's going to be the case. You will not see the Panthers at minus 114 or minus 120 in game number three. No, it's going to be like minus 135, minus 140, maybe even higher. Especially if they drop game number two tonight. Now, what did we see in game number one? And what goes to overtime? A classic back and forth affair. Edmonton proving, much like the Indiana Pacers in the NBA, they're never out of any game. And that's the thing. The firepower of the Edmonton Oilers is so dangerous because no matter how many goals they're down, they are never out of any game. I go back to that series in the first round against the LA Kings. Edmonton drops the first two games in LA. In game number three, they are trailing the whole way. They score a goal to tie it at four in the third period. And Jim Hiller, the head coach of the LA Kings, makes the most boneheaded decision that any coach has made here in the Stanley Cup playoffs. He decides to challenge the game-tying goal. The replay center reviews it. It's a good goal. And what happens? You hockey fans know. Maybe some of you hockey fans don't know. If you challenge a play and you lose that challenge, you take a bench minor penalty, which means the opposing team goes on the power play. So not only did Edmonton tie the game 7 minutes into the third period, down two games to none, down 4-3, ties the game at four, 10 seconds later on the power play, takes the lead 5-4. They don't look back. They win that game 7-4. In fact, they win the next five straight games. They eliminate the Kings. They move on in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Imagine if the Kings never challenged that goal. Are the Oilers even in the Stanley Cup final right now? It's an interesting question to ask. But it happened. And they won. And then they continued to win. Despite Stuart Skinner, the goaltender, being terrible early in the playoffs, getting benched for Calvin Pickard, having to come back in when Pickard gets hurt against the Golden Knights, and then Skinner playing out of his mind for the rest of the playoffs. Rough game number one, but that's going to happen between both of these teams, between both of these goaltenders. And coming into this series, I absolutely gave the Panthers the goaltending edge. But the offense and the scoring capability of the Edmonton Oilers, even without one of their top guys in Zach Hyman, is too much to overlook. And I know that Florida has this incredible record or had this incredible record of winning playoff games when having a two-goal lead. But against this Edmonton Oilers team, no lead is safe. No lead is safe. I want to take a look deeper into game number one from an analytical perspective, because this is a numbers game here on VSiN. I'm Scott Seidenberg, in for Gil Alexander. And if we look at some of the advanced numbers in game number one, we see that in all situations, whether it was even strength or on the power play or on the penalty kill, the Edmonton Oilers had an expected goal number of 4.49 to the Florida Panthers' 3.88. And, well, it makes sense. Edmonton won by one. Let's dive further. Corsi is a stat that NHL analytics use to determine your possession. How many shots are you getting off over the course of the game? There's two different stats that define it. There's your Corsi percentage and your Fenwick percentage. Corsi percentage defines every shot attempt that you take over the course of a game. Whether it's blocked, whether it misses the net, doesn't matter. You try and take a shot in the NHL, it goes into that category. Fenwick, on the other hand, takes out block shots. It measures how many shots are you getting through to the net. And to me, it's a measure of your success, a better measure of your success, over the course of an NHL game. Because what's the goal, right? Pucks on net, pucks on net. So let's look at game number one. Corsi, so all the shot attempts, and again, I'm looking at the entirety of the game, not just on the power play or the penalty kill. Edmonton, 89, Florida, 84. Very even. Of those shots, the ones that got through to the net, 66 for Edmonton, 59 for Florida. Again, pretty even. Total shots on goal, though, see, this is the kicker. Of those shots that you take, how many are actually on goal? 46 for Edmonton, 32 for Florida. That was your biggest edge in the game. High danger chances, 17 total for Edmonton, 12 for Florida. And three high danger goals to two. The difference in the game was the pucks that actually got through to the net for the Oilers, as opposed to the ones that did not for the Florida Panthers. Florida's going to have to do a much better job of getting the puck on goal in game number two tonight if they hope to even up the series at a game apiece. We'll update you on the Conn Smythe odds, as our best bet is looking great right now after game number one. But is there still value on that board? Not just on that pick, but on others. We'll answer that question, plus give you the best bets for that game coming up tonight. Plus, we have to get into the Major League Baseball schedule. We got a full slate of games tonight. Will the Colorado Rockies make it four straight wins? There's no way that's going to happen, right? Maybe. Hey, want to bet smarter? Start with smarter insights. Right now, you can check out Matt Grissom's College World Series Super Regionals Guide, Greg Peterson's Major League Baseball Best Bets, and the Acorn Stakes Preview and Saratoga Best Bets. Belmont Stakes is coming up. Plus, later on today, Jonathan Davis with his Game 2 picks for Panthers Oilers. Zach Cohn's got French Open Best Bets. And Tyler Shoemaker's WNBA picks. Sign up for as little as $9.99 to get full access to VSiN articles. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Scott Satterberg back here in for Gil Alexander. It's a numbers game here on VSiN, the sports betting network. You can always hit me up on Twitter at Scott's On Air. Hit us off on the network at VSiN Live. As we were talking about game two of the Stanley Cup final tonight, I wanted to update you on the Conn Smythe odds. And the Conn Smythe Award, of course, goes to the MVP of the entire postseason, not just the MVP of the Stanley Cup final. Connor McDavid was your overwhelming favorite coming into this series, and his odds have shortened up naturally with the Edmonton Oilers winning game number one. So McDavid remains your betting favorite, but we have seen movement on other players. So right now, Connor McDavid is at minus 150. And if you look, the second favorite is Sergei Bobrovsky, the goaltender of the Florida Panthers, who prior to this series was at plus 250 odds. With him losing game number one, he has dropped down to plus 400. I still believe that he is the deserving favorite to be the Conn Smythe winner should Florida win this series. Because if this series remains a high-scoring series, like we saw last night in the game number one, 4-3. Florida's not going to win. Just put it that way. The higher scoring this series is, the more it favors the better offensive team in the Edmonton Oilers, even without Zach Hyman. They're still a better offensive team. The strength of the Panthers is their ability to limit scoring, and they have the goaltending edge in Sergei Bobrovsky. So if Florida's going to win these games, he's going to have to be playoff Bob, which he's fully capable of. He's got three shutouts in this postseason alone. And you know what? when this series goes back to Florida, he could pitch a shutout in either game three or game number four. I actually might sprinkle on that at some point. He's that good. So I do believe that he is the rightful favorite on the Panthers side. There's a couple other players that have a lot of value on the board as well. My pick prior to this series began was Leon Draisaitl. And right now, Draisaitl is at plus 450 odds. He has shortened up from a plus 800 to plus 750 before the series to now plus 450 as the third favorite after game number one. He scored the first goal of the game just a minute in. And Draisaitl scored the game-winning goal in overtime, which was massive for these Conn Smythe futures. Why was it massive? Because there's another player deeper down the board that had incredible value prior to game number one and has probably the same value right now after game number one. And that's Sam Bennett of the Florida Panthers. Bennett came into the Stanley Cup final at north of 30-1 to win the Conn Smythe. Coming into the series, Bennett led all scorers in the postseason with 10 goals. Not only did he score in game number one, he scored twice in game number one. So he still leads all scorers with 12 goals here in the postseason. And with even, and think about this, even with Florida losing game number one, Bennett's odds shorten from 30-1 down to 20-1. And I still think there's value on that 20-1 if you believe that he's going to continue to score and the Panthers wind up winning this series. I mentioned Bennett leads all skaters with 12 goals. He's second in hits with 87, and he is third with over 100 shot attempts. He is doing it on both ends and making things happen for the Florida Panthers, which is why I still believe, even at 20-1, Bennett holds value more so than a bigger name player in Alexander Barkov, who's the fourth favorite at 12-1. But if I'm picking right now, I'm going with the same pick I had prior to the series, and that's Leon Draisaitl. Yes, Connor McDavid is the overwhelming favorite for a reason. McDavid's the best player in the world. And the narrative surrounding Connor McDavid is too good to pass up. One, last year, wins the Conn Smythe in a losing effort. Absolutely deserved it. He was the best player in that postseason last year. He broke Wayne Gretzky's assist record for most assists in a playoff run and was instrumental in bringing the Oilers back from three games down to force a game seven. So even in a losing effort, he wins the Conn Smythe. Well-deserved. This year, should Edmonton win the Stanley Cup, the voters might think, you know what? We're going to give him his moment. Because last year, McDavid stayed in the dressing room. He did not come out to accept his award. This year, maybe the writers say, we're going to give him his time to shine. Plus, he's also, as I mentioned, the best player in the world. And how about this? I've tweeted this out over a week ago. I bring it up every time I talk about the Stanley Cup final because this is unbelievable when you talk about historical context. If you look at the generational talents in this game, there's no argument. Wayne Gretzky is the greatest of all time. You've gone from Gretzky to then Sidney Crosby picking up the mantle as his generational talent. And now it's Connor McDavid as this generation's talent. Wayne Gretzky lost his first ever trip to the Stanley Cup final. The very next year wins it in a rematch against the New York Islanders. Sidney Crosby loses his first trip to the Stanley Cup final. Wins it the very next year in a rematch against the Detroit Red Wings. And Connor McDavid lost his first trip to the Stanley Cup final. Has an opportunity this year to win it in a rematch against the Florida Panthers. You can't script this stuff. And so I think voters might buy into the narrative, but for a guy in Leon Draisaitl, who's one of the top players in the world, he is 1A to Connor McDavid on this team. Draisaitl came into this postseason 1 point behind McDavid for the most points in the playoffs. McDavid had 26, Draisaitl had 25. Draisaitl had one more goal, McDavid had two more assists. But in the betting markets, in the series prop markets, Leon Draisaitl was an overwhelming favorite to lead the series in goals scored. So if that's the case, and he winds up leading the series in goals scored, he'll likely then lead the postseason in goals scored. He'll likely have more points than Connor McDavid. And how are you going to not vote for the guy that has the most goals and the most points and helped your team win the Stanley Cup to be the Conn Smythe Award winner. So I still think, even though you lost a little bit of the price, I still think there's value on Draisaitl at plus 450. Two goals and the biggest one, the game winner in overtime, that was the one to put it over the edge right now. Over a player in Sam Bennett, who also had two goals in game number one. I'm Scott Seidenberg, always on Twitter, as I mentioned, at Scott's On Air, ScottsOnAir. Keeping an eye on what's going on at Roland Garros French Open, where Carlos Alcaraz took the second set in a tiebreak from Lorenzo Musetti. After Musetti won the first set, Alcaraz closed as minus 700 on the betting line. Right now, live line minus 475 as they play the third set there, semifinals of the French Open. Coming up a little bit later on, the second semifinal, Jannik Sinner, a minus 425 favorite over Novak Djokovic. Find more French Open betting analysts available right now on vsin.com. The other big news in sports that came down yesterday, no surprise that it was going to happen. The surprise was the timing. And that was Aaron Rodgers announcing that he will sign a one-year deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And all you need to know about the impact that Rodgers will have is how the betting market reacts. The Steelers were 40-1 or 45-1 to win the Super Bowl at most books. After Rodgers signed, the Steelers remain 40-1. And some books that had the 45-1 dropped down to 40-1 to kind of be in line with everybody else. So no real reaction in the market. Now, a lot of that could have to do with the fact that it was already priced in. Everyone knew that Aaron Rodgers was going to eventually sign with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So the 40-1 price on the Steelers to win the Super Bowl was already factoring in Aaron Rodgers signing as their quarterback. But let's be honest here. With all due respect to Aaron Rodgers, does he elevate the Pittsburgh Steelers? They got DK Metcalf now. You got a big weapon. By the way, Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season. I don't know if you ever heard that before. But does Aaron Rodgers, at his age, with what he has done the past year and coming off the injury, does he make the Steelers a better team than they were last year with their quarterback situation? I honestly don't think so. I don't. I will not be betting on the Pittsburgh Steelers this year. And I find it fascinating that the Steelers play not only the Jets, but also the Green Bay Packers this year. And I think Mike Tomlin might be in danger of suffering his first losing season as a head coach. Hey, before the lines move, the sharp plays at sharpplays.com is already there. They don't chase the market, they move it. You're not going to outmuscle billion-dollar sportsbooks or full-time professional bettors on your own, but with the Sharp Plays, you don't have to. Powered by cutting-edge AI and trusted insider sources, the Sharp Plays delivers the edge that serious bettors rely on. You'll get free betting reports, real-time alerts, and market-moving insights all delivered to you via email or X, and this isn't some overnight startup. The Sharp Plays has a documented track record going back to 2011 with receipts, public logs, and results right there on the site. SharpPlays.com, trusted by pros, watched by the books. Check them out now at sharpplays.com. Coming up next, we'll get back into the NBA Finals. Alex Barutha, chief NBA editor over at RotoWire, will give us his reaction to game number one and best bets for game number two. I'm Scott Seidenberg. It's a numbers game here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on A Numbers Game, Scott Seidenberg in for Gil Alexander here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And before we get to our guest and talk NBA Finals, we have breaking news in the NHL. The Dallas Stars have relieved head coach Pete DeBoer of his coaching duties. So Pete DeBoer, no longer the head coach of the Dallas Stars. Dallas losing in the Western Conference Final to the Edmonton Oilers once again. And so Pete DeBoer is out
as the head coach of the Dallas Stars. I don't think he'll be out of work long, but that is the breaking news coming down here in the last 10 minutes or so from Dallas Stars. Once again, firing their head coach, Pete DeBoer. We'll get plenty more reaction to this, plus also take a look at the Stanley Cup Final game number two coming up tonight a little bit later on. But right now we head out to the Progressive guest line and we welcome in Chief NBA Editor over at RotoWire. He is Alex Barutha to react to game number one of the NBA Finals and preview some best bets for game number two. Alex, thanks so much for joining us here on VSiN. And look, people have called me a hater throughout these NBA playoffs because have I been putting down the Indiana Pacers? Absolutely. But I got to be honest with you, I don't understand how they're doing this. We could talk about the historical context of these comebacks. They had, what, 19 turnovers in the first half? How did they win this game last night?
The thing about the Indiana Pacers, you know, they have this baseline style of like, we're gonna play really fast. We're going to get up and down the court. We're going to push off misses. But they are able, as good as any team in the NBA, to morph their identity based on their opponent. And yes, they committed a ton of turnovers last night, which is not like them at all. But they were like, okay, hey, if Oklahoma City is going to go small to try to keep up with us, we're going to crash the offensive boards. And they had 13 offensive rebounds, which is a super high rate for them. And they were really efficient shooting the three. They just took open threes when they got them. Oklahoma City likes to pack the paint defensively. And so you know you're going to get some open threes, or at least lightly contested threes, and they were not shy about taking them, especially guys like Obi Toppin fired off 8 threes off the bench and was fantastic. So a lot of it was just the possession game, taking what the defense gives you. But man, the comebacks for Indiana, it really is unbelievable.
Did the Thunder mess up last night by not having a bigger lineup on the floor in the final minutes or so? Because in my opinion, I want the big guys out there to get these rebounds in the final minute. You know, when Shea misses that shot in, you know, to maybe, you know, put the Thunder up three, would have been nice to have a big guy down there to get a rebound. Instead, the Pacers, who have shown this ability to score late in games, who have shown the ability to make these historic shots late in games, maybe it's better for Mark Daigneault and the Thunder to have a bigger, slower, albeit, lineup out there in the closing minutes.
I was just surprised at Oklahoma City's lineup change in general. I know that you maybe want to play smaller to deal with the way Indiana runs. I also would say that they're not able to run as much if you can get offensive rebounds. It's a give and take, right? But Hart, the reality is Hartenstein's one of their best players. So by playing him 17 minutes and not having him out there late in games, I mean, you're bringing someone else out. And I know, like, look, Caruso's great. Isaiah Joe, he can hit shots. Like, they have a very good team. But I would have preferred they tried Hartenstein more. Again, he's so effective. He can alter a series. And I just, the way that Indiana was killing them on the offensive glass, and just in the glass in general, right? I mean, they had 56 rebounds in this game. At some point, if you're Daigneault, I think you just have to throw Hartenstein in there and say, okay, well, let's get the boards back. And then see how Indiana adjusts to us getting the boards back.
That's a great point. You know, I mentioned that I got burned on Isaiah Hartenstein going under a 7.5 rebound prop in game number one. He had 9 rebounds because all the talk was, as you mentioned, the lineup. And now he wasn't going to play the full amount of minutes that he normally plays. He plays 17 minutes. He still has 9 rebounds. But in game number two, we're seeing a prop line now of 6.5. For Isaiah Hartenstein, is that an attractive prop to you to play over on Hartenstein's rebounds, thinking maybe Daigneault does revert back to playing a bigger lineup?
I think I would lean over on that because, you lost this game first and foremost because you did not control the glass. So if there's one adjustment you can make right away, it's at least, if not starting Hartenstein, just getting him out there more often. And he's someone throughout the postseason is basically has a floor of like 6 rebounds, right? Mm-hmm. No matter how many minutes he plays, he runs out there and gets 6 boards, seemingly. I think I would lean over on there, shake it to the over on a lot of books. But I think to me, that's the easiest adjustment to make.
Alex Barutha from RotoWire joining me, Scott Seidenberg on the Progressive guest line. It's a numbers game here on VSiN. Taking a look at the prop market, game number one. Shea goes off 38 points. Tyrese Haliburton only 14, though. Yes, the biggest shot of them all, but only 14 points. What adjustments are you making to your handicapping as far as the prop market is concerned? And where are you finding some value here looking at game number two?
Yeah, I think you know, some has been made about like SGA shooting too much. I think that is fine. I thought he played well. I mean, 38 points on 30 shots. That's fine. I thought a lot of them were good looks. You'd like to get more teammates involved, I think. But the the Halliburton thing, I was on his under 26 and a half points plus assists in game one. Now it's down to 24 and a half, 25 and a half on a lot of books. I think I'm fine with the under again, to be honest. The Pacers are very, they're okay with just Halliburton sending the ball to somebody else like Andrew Nembhard, to Siakam, and they play a free flowing style of offense that, yes, when they play their baseline style, it's Halliburton controlling everything. But that's why they have Nembhard out there, is to, you know, help relieve Halliburton of some touches. Same with Siakam, who can get the ball in the high post and do some stuff. With the way their offensive rebounding, I mean, even if your shot quality is a little bit lower because Halliburton's not controlling anything, you can still get extra possession. So I think I would still lean under on the Halliburton points plus assist props.
You mentioned maybe Shea getting his teammates more involved, only 3 assists in game number one. This is a guy that averages over 6 assists per game here in these NBA playoffs, and his line is at 6.5 assists for game number two. Any feel for maybe going over or attacking the under once again here for Shea assists?
I think I would still lean under, actually, because I don't think Shea shooting that much is the reason they lost that game. Mm. I think they just needed to control the boards, and maybe that's being a little too simplistic, but we're still talking about a series that is expected to be fast paced with a high over under. Right. And I still expect SGA to shoot a lot. They need him because Chet Holmgren was completely invisible in this game. He was trying to bully Miles Turner at points. It was not working. And in game one, I just did not see Jalen Williams had some moments, right? He had a big dunk. He could make his shots. That's fine. But I did not see enough offensively from the rest of the Oklahoma City Thunder to make me think that SGA won't need to continue shooting as much as he did in game one.
Yeah. And I was surprised looking at the 3-pointer numbers. Like, I thought we'd get more threes from Chet. I thought he would at least attempt more threes. I was shocked to see that he was only 0-for-1, and, you know, Jalen Williams only make 1 3-pointer, so not a great deep shooting night there from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Final thing, Alex, where are you looking in terms of side total, first half, first quarter, any derivative markets that you're playing in regards to where we are here for game number two? I understand that there's a tax. Thunder go from 9 to 9.5-point favorites, now 11-point favorites for game number two. The total is, though, down, though, from where we were in game number one, a lower total of 228 now for game number two.
So I have said pretty much the entire time that I think if the Pacers are double-digit underdogs, that I will take them on the number. Yeah. And so I'm going to lean back on that. Now, I understand OKC, they are certainly a team that could come out and beat you by 40. But I just think Indiana, they're scrappy enough. They can morph enough in their play style to just keep games close. So I'm going to stick with that in game two. And I do like the over only because both of these teams do like to foul. And they like to run and they like to commit turnovers. And there's just a lot of opportunities for quick scoring or scoring when the clock is not moving. So I think I will take Pacers at plus 11. With the over on 227, but I completely understand if anyone wants to take OKC because of the way that they can punch back.
And listen, I wish I could bet free throws. I wish there was a prop market out there for the amount of free throws, because I would put my bankroll that Shea shoots more than 8 free throws in game number two. That's going to happen.
Yes.
The refs, it's game two. Get whatever ref you want out there. The whistles will be blown. Shea will shoot more than 8 free throws. Alex, great stuff as always. Continued success, and we'll catch up throughout the playoffs, throughout the finals here.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on.
There he is, Alex Barutha. Check him out. Senior NBA editor over at RotoWire, giving us his take for game number two coming up on Sunday in Oklahoma City with the Thunder down 1-0 against the Indiana Pacers. Hey, horse racing fans, get ready. VSiN at the Track is live today with everything you need to know about tomorrow's Belmont Stakes. Join racing experts Mike Somich, who nailed the superfecta in the Kentucky Derby. I mean, that was incredible. As well as Patrick Maher, as they break down the field, deliver expert analysis, and share their top picks. Don't miss it. VSiN at the Track, streaming live today at 2:10 p.m. Eastern on the VSiN YouTube channel at VSiN Live.
Pro bettor Steve Fezzik joins me, Scott Seidenberg, coming up next. It's a numbers game here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.